right, this is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. We've got a packed show for you today, so let's get into it. At the back end of the show, we'll hear Joshua Shaines talking about We Are Crossing New Thresholds. He's speaking with Sam Goldman from Refuse Fascism on the Inside Without Now podcast. Joshua Shaines is an associate professor of Jewish studies and the director of the Center of Israel Studies at the College of Charleston. And opening the show up, we'll hear Andy Z, a board member of Refuse Fascism and an advocate of the new communism of Bob Avakian, speaking to a Refuse Fascism protest in L.A. on Saturday, October 10th. Refuse Fascism has called for daily protests all over the U.S. to demand Trump Pence out now. And for clarity, I should mention that in L.A. and other cities, volunteers are standing in cages constructed at protest sites, dramatizing the concentration camps that hold tens of thousands of immigrants. Some of the women are wearing pants stained with imitation blood to symbolize the thousands of women who bled to death when abortion was illegal, and as a warning that fascism is a danger to women's lives.
We're here for one reason, one central purpose. The most powerful country in the world, with the power to annihilate the push of a button all of humanity, is just weeks away from an election that the president who is running for re-election has said is invalid and that he's preparing to steal. This is not just a president or a reactionary Republican, as we see in most elections, between two parties, neither of which represent the interests of the masses of humanity. But in this election, we are facing something different. We are facing a regime that is a fascist regime that, should they stay in power, will bring a fascist America, and that has real meaning and real difference for people here and all around the world. What these women were doing, and others yesterday, for 48 hours in these cages, it really affected me very deeply when I spoke with them and when I saw this. They are visualizing what tens of thousands of people are going through right now in concentration camps in this country, and too many people are standing aside from that. And that is unconscionable. Do not ask how the German people could have allowed Hitler to come to power if you were not out here in this square. Why are their pants bloody? Because in one of these concentration camps, women's uteruses were taken from them, not explained. Let me just say this to you. When Donald Trump was in Minnesota and he said to the white people in that audience, "We have good genes," did you understand the relationship between that and these bloody pants? If you didn't, I will tell you. A fascist regime that is a white supremacist regime is preparing and is already carrying out the beginnings of a genocide. This is social Darwinism. This is saying the survival of the fittest. This f***ing maniac got out there yesterday. I don't care what steroid he's on and said, you know, I'm a perfect physical specimen. This is Nazi ideology. This is fascist ideology. And this is why people of color are having their wombs ripped out of their bodies. This is what you're facing. I am not spitting hyperbole. I didn't make this up. Although I have to say, last night I couldn't have quite made it up. They would have said I was exaggerating. And people did say that when we started Refuse Fascism. They said, this is not a fascist America. There's no fascist organization. Yes, there is. It's been forming for decades, and Trump has come to the head of it. And now you've seen it. You've seen it in two dimensions. You've seen it in the dimension of these fascist Proud Boys and Oath Keepers and the tens of thousands of people who are being organized right now to show up at polling places as part of the theft of this election. Before I go into that more, I want to come back to what these two young women are doing today, what others have done over the last 48 hours. Because it's not just that immigrants are in cages, but children have been separated from their parents. I want you to think and go inside the inhumanity of that. And just this week, they released the tapes of his first lapdog attorney general, Jeff Sessions, who was not enough of a psycho fan that he got rid of him and has this guy Barr, who he's also now going after. And Jeff Sessions and his deputy, Rosenstein, I think his name was, said, and take the babies. Take the babies. Well, I was just a young child, not really, but in the 1960s, during the Vietnam War, there was a massacre in Vietnam, a slaughter by American GIs of 150 or so Vietnamese, mostly women, older people, and babies. And some of the artists who I knew put out a poster that said, and babies, and yes, and babies. And here we are, once again, and babies are being separated from their parents, and people are being put in cages and in concentration camps, and he's calling for law and order. They've gone into places like Portland, when somebody was suspected of potentially killing one of these fascist people who were marauding through downtown Portland, and they said, take him out, and they took him out without any trial, without any indictment, but an execution. And then they bragged about it, the same way they bragged about it in Kenosha, Wisconsin, when one of these white supremacist youth, Trump supporter, went and shot three brave young men, two of whom died. Don't tell us that this isn't fascism and that it doesn't have consequence. But what are we doing here? How are we going to stop this? We face a rolling coup. What does that mean? A rolling coup means that they are piece by piece seizing power. Now, it's true that Trump has power now, but they have not yet been able to fully consolidate a thoroughly fascist regime. That has meaning. What is the meaning? It is an open, terroristic dictatorship, more open than what normally exists for the masses of people in this country. It means that there is no rule of law other than the rule of law that they say it is. That has real consequence, and it has real meaning for the lives of billions of people on this planet, which they are also moving very rapidly to destroy. The rolling coup is that they've already begun stealing this election. That is happening. Now, because its stakes are so high, those of us who are, like myself, a revolutionary communist, a follower of Baba Vakian, we don't normally vote in these elections because we see that both of these parties represent the interests of the capitalist system. But in this election, it is essential that people vote to get as many votes in a landslide against Trump, because that will create more favorable conditions for the struggle that we need to wage, because he has already told you and he has shown you that even if he loses an election, he will try to nullify it through the courts, through machinations, and through intimidation by these fascist thugs. So voting is essential in this election, but it is not enough, and if that is all you do, you are collaborating with the fascist regime. There's only one way to stop this, and that is us getting organized out into the streets of this country every day from now until the election, assuming they don't get rid of him before then because of our pressure, but we haven't built up sufficient pressure to make that happen yet. But if he's still there, we are going to need a tremendous power of masses of people that cross all political, all different social, all different gender, all different nationality lines to say, Trump, Pence, out now. One demand. We're going to come from many different places with many different analyses, many different demands. But at this moment in history, every struggle, every yearning that people have to be free has got to go through removing this regime. If we do not do that, I'm going to ask you to imagine. Usually I ask people to imagine something more along the lines of what John Lennon said. Or imagine that there was a million of us out here right now. And we're going to get to that in a second. But I want you first to imagine January 24th with Trump declaring that he's president for another 4 years, and he was cheated out of the first 4 years, so this is just the beginning of his reign. I want you to think about what that will mean. And for those who are caught up in this dangerous silliness that they are all the same and I don't care, I don't care about who wins there. I'm against capitalism. Well, good for you, and I am too. But right now we got a fascist regime that's standing in front of us. And for all of you who, and the people you know and in your families who say, but I'm going to vote, You have to go out there and struggle with them. As Michelle was saying, to get organized, that is not enough. And in fact, if that's what you rely on, it will be a disaster. That's why I want you to imagine what he will do should he remain in power. You should take a close look, go home and Google it, what the leader of India did at the beginning of his second term. Locked down the entire province of Kashmir. He denied citizenship to millions and millions of people who had been in India for some time. And he's on a rampage to turn India into a Hindu fascist theocracy. Just as right here in this country, the force that is behind and is organized behind Donald Trump is a political form of theocratic Christian fascism, symbolized and concentrated in Mike Pence. So that just brings me to, how are we going to actually do this? Let's be honest, there's not that many of us here. How do the few of you become the many? Well, this is part of the answer, what the two sisters are doing here. This is part of the answer. This is putting it in people's face what this actually means today, and far worse should he stay in power. It's forcing people to confront that. It's taking some bold actions. This is one kind, there's others. Taking some bold actions, and particularly doing that in the town square, wherever that is, in a central place where we're going to be every day. So people who feel the way you feel that brought you out today on Saturday, see this as a magnet and they come. And then, once they get here, they have to be turned into what Michelle was calling grassroots organizers. That means going out and organizing people just like yourselves to come down to the square. When you organize people, you probably got to argue with them. I talked to a lot of people this morning. You got to argue with them because they think somebody else is going to take care of this. They're hoping that the election works out. Here's something else that's happening to people right now. People are being deceived by the delusions of the mainstream media who are telling you Biden is winning by a lot. He's winning now, he's up in the polls even less than Hillary Clinton was. But this is not over, and you can't rely on that because he's going to steal the election. You have to make that case to people and struggle with them to come out. So that's two things. One, we're in the central square. We're doing things. We got to take some bold actions to become a pole of attraction. Two, we've got to go out and organize people. But wait, by itself, that isn't going to get us where we need to go. That won't get us where we need to go. So what's the magic sauce in here? Well, there's no magic, but there is a sauce, and here's the sauce. The sauce is this. Every day, this regime is committing another egregious and outrageous and criminal crime. Every day, people are being jolted. We, acting in the center of town, demonstrating in neighborhoods, calling people out, are acting on that stage and saying every single thing he does is another reason you should be out here. And that's one part of it. The other part of what's happening is that the Democratic Party is not fighting Trump the way he needs to be fought. That's in this pamphlet, Voting Will Not Be Enough, We Need to Take to the Streets and Stay in the Streets, Demanding Trump Pounce Out Now by Bob Avakian. Read part three of this. Because the Democrats will not wage a campaign that could really rouse the enthusiasm of people to defend black lives, to defend the environment, to go up against the white supremacy that is at the root of the oppression and police murder of black people and Latino people. It's at the root of the demonization of immigrants. It's at the root of what they're doing to women and LGBTQ people and to the environment. They will not fight it on that basis. They want to fight it on issues we can all reach across the aisle on, like health care. Well, I'm for health care too. Your health care sucks, but it does make a difference if there is the Affordable Care Act. But that's not the grounds to get the enthusiasm of people. They're not fighting this the way it needs to be fought. And in fact, Biden has told you that he doesn't want you going out after the election because it's going to be settled by the votes. So he's told you this, and all these Democratic mass organizations, Move On, Indivisible, they're going to be listening to that. And they're mainly not preparing for the kind of struggle. You can't prepare to fight this kind of fascist movement on one day's notice. Are you kidding me? These people are armed, they're organized, they're training. We need to have a movement of the many people that's nonviolent, sustained protests day after day up to the election and then after the election, so that we create a situation where people who are in power, who are basically towing the line and are themselves afraid of what Trump is doing, would do to them, are forced in that situation to say, we better do something about this because now we got a bigger problem. We got a bigger problem. We got the masses of people in the streets, which is what we saw in June and July. You don't know the power you had in June and July. You've got to think about what power you had. That's not being summed up correctly. Oh, we did June and July. Now we can go change some local ordinance, which, of course, yeah, you should change these local ordinances around chokeholds and all of this. But you changed the discussion in this country to admit that this is a white supremacist society from its inception. People did not say that in power ever before that. That's because of what you did. Now, we need that same power in the streets. We are not just aiming to be in the town square every day doing things like this. This is to awaken the people so that we get tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and eventually millions of people in the street to say, no, this Trump regime must go, and now. That's what we're doing. So to repeat, we are creating a magnet, a pole of attraction by taking bold action and being out every day. People come to the square, they get materials to go out and organize in the neighborhood. And we tell them, you're not just organizing on a flat ground, you're organizing on a very rocky and terrain where there's all kinds of big bumps in the road. This maniacal, homicidal, okay, I stop with the curses of Trump. This fascist in power is doing things every day, and that provides the basis for people to see that what you represent out here today with your signs, with your racism t-shirt, with your Trump Pence Out Now t-shirt, with your Revolution Nothing Less t-shirt, with all these different t-shirts, Black Lives Matter t-shirt back there, all these t-shirts, America was never great over here. All these people can come together with one single demand. And you know what? We have some differences, probably big ones. What better way to start discussing those differences than standing shoulder to shoulder and fighting against the fascist regime? So this is our charge. This is our charge. Now, fewer people have started mass movements in history. You can't be deterred by that. They will call you names, they will say you're foolish, they'll tell you to wait. They'll tell you to be patient, they'll tell you to do it the right way. Just vote. Well, you should vote in this election to vote against Trump, but that is not enough. And we have to fight for that. We have to be out here, and we have to reach out to people, and we have to struggle very hard with it. Not for ourselves. These women did, you know, I just want to say one more thing about this, because we spoke, and I don't want to tell on people, but these were tearful conversations, and they should be. Because if you have a beating heart in your body, if you have any soul, you are not going to let a society that's got its knee on the neck of humanity the way this regime does. So we have to go into this with a tremendous amount of heart. And I just want to say, and close with this. Now, people do this all the time. This is the first time. You're the first ones to ever watch me try to do something on a cell phone in public, okay? Refuse Fascism has a pledge. You'll hear the whole pledge. I urge you to watch the show that I host and the show that's doing the filming here, the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show. You will see Dr. Cornel West and the great R&B singer Layla Hathaway reading this pledge at the beginning of the current episode. It's on YouTube at the RevComs. I'm just going to read from the end of this pledge because it is what's in my heart. I think it's what's in your heart if you're out here today. No longer can we live with howling mobs resurrecting Jim Crow, fascist thugs attacking our protests, the right to vote stolen by defenders of the Confederacy. We will not worship the flag or accept the theocracy. We will not become collaborators on a march to a racist genocide. We will not hand the future to the scorchers of the planet. 4 more years, 4 more months, and it could be too late to change the course of history as the Trump-Pence regime sabotages the election and drags humanity to the edge of extinction. Here and now, we pledge to unite in our millions, rising together in nonviolent resistance to stop a great horror. We pledge to stay in the streets, overcoming fear and uncertainty until this American fascism has been brought to a halt. And we pledge our determination to prevail over a regime that imperils the people of the world and the earth itself. Say with me, in the name of humanity,
in the name of humanity,
we refuse
to accept
a fascist America. Now, one last point. It's just a postscript. But these bloody pants, I said, were about the hysterectomies that have been done to immigrants in detention camps. But come Monday, a theocratic Christian fascist is going to be nominated and railroaded into the Supreme Court. This is somebody who's being put in the court, rushed into the court now to be able to ratify the election of Donald Trump. But it's worse than that. This is somebody who is determined to, by her faith, her conviction, and what she has said in law, to overturn the right of women to abortion, the right of women to birth control, who belongs to an organization that is actually where she was called a handmaid, subordinate to her husband and subordinate to men. This is somebody who, along with two other Supreme Court justices, believes that extending the marriage right to LGBTQ people was wrong. This is someone who will deny health care for pre-existing conditions. The bloody pants need to be out here again this week, along with that handmaid's uniform and garb, and bring to people again to shock the conscience, and we should go through the shopping malls. We should make the shoppers confront this. Not be rude, not spit revenge at people, not getting angry at them because they have money for a nice meal. That's not the point. We have to bring to them the truth that what is coming down the pike is a great horror for humanity, for half of humanity, and even more. And that we cannot conscience. So once again, say with me, in the name of humanity,
in the name of humanity,
we refuse
to accept
a fascist America. Thank you very much. We'll see you every day in the streets.
That was Andy Z, board member of Refuse Fascism, speaking at a Refuse Fascism protest in Los Angeles. You can contact Refuse Fascism at refusefascism.org or on social media at Refuse Fascism. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I.
Now let's hear Joshua Shaines, Associate Professor of Jewish Studies and Director of the Center of Israel Studies at the College of Charleston, talking with Sam Goldman on We Are Crossing New Thresholds.
Today, we're talking with Josh Shaines, Associate Professor of Jewish Studies and Director of the Center of Israel Studies at the College of Charleston.
Here's my thinking on fascism. And I'll just say at the outset, I was trained at the University of Wisconsin. I went there because of their FAME program in German history. I'd expected to become a Holocaust historian. And I studied this for a few years, and then I later switched to an earlier period in Jewish history. Fascism is a form of politics that has certain aspects that you want to look for. Jason Stanley does a good job with some of these in his books. So for example, you want to look for a cult of male leadership. You want to look for an effort to attack the media. The Nazis had a term for this called Lügenpresse, which means lying press. The media was a threat to them before they could shut it down because it was exposing their lies. And so what they did was they wanted to sort of, I don't know if gaslight is the right term, but they wanted to sort of delegitimize the media by saturating so much lies and so much ideas about what is truth anyway, that the media could no longer do its job. Obviously, the term today, fake news, has done that job for us. Fake news is really not just a close coincidental translation of lying press, but actually doing the same work as lying press. You want to look for a sense of hierarchy, a sense of natural hierarchy among humans. Some are naturally better than others. Hyper-nationalism, of course. You want to look for a sense of victimization, that we are being victimized. We are the victim. In that case, it was the Aryan Germans. In this case, it's men or white men or white America or Western civilization. You want to look for a cult of violence, not just violence as an acceptable tool, but actually almost a celebration of violence. What Robert Paxton called the beauty of violence. Celebrating violence as a wonderful thing, as a wonderful act. That's part of fascism as well. You want to look for what the Germans call Gleichschaltung. Gleichschaltung is the German word for when the Nazi Party tried to Nazify the various institutions of the state, to turn them from ordinary bureaucrats doing their jobs to loyalists to Hitler and to the party. That means the judiciary, that means the Justice Department, that means the everything from the judges to the police chiefs and so on. I could go on, but you get the idea. We're seeing these things, and the tipping point, authors don't get to choose their headlines.
What headline would you have chosen?
The problem with tipping point is, I don't like the language of tipping point, I'll be honest. I know it gets clicks, and I appreciate that, and I want people to read. But the problem of tipping point is twofold. First of all, it suggests it's too late. And second of all, it sort of suggests that there's a certain moment where it's all over. And that's never really quite true with fascism and fascist politics. It's continuously entrenching itself. And in our case, it's continuously getting worse. The thing that really got my attention last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago now, was the rise of militias. You know, that was Weimar Germany. If any of your listeners have watched the show Babylon Berlin, it's a great show.
So good.
One of the things that show gets so well is the sort of chaos on the streets of Berlin just before the Nazi revolution. Militias were running rampant without being suppressed by the state in any way. In fact, the state tended to use those, especially the right-wing militias. They wouldn't stop them. They would sort of celebrate them. And that's what really caught my attention with Kyle Rittenhouse. The way that you have these white vigilantes, he was 17, armed and not being arrested, but being given water bottles and said, thank you so much for coming. He commits murder, certainly homicide, and he's not arrested right away. He just goes home. That is what evoked for me the collapse of Weimar Germany, the collapse of democratic societies in the past. And this shocked even me, I have to admit, and I'm pretty damn jaded, but it shocked even me that the right-wing blogosphere, and Trump took a couple days, he wanted to make sure his people were behind it first, are celebrating him as a hero. Donald Trump Jr. said, we all get into trouble when we're kids. Keep in mind, this is the same family, Donald Trump Sr., who called to lynch the Central Park Five, who were teenagers, 14, 15, and 16, called to lynch them before they were found guilty in a court of law, called to lynch them again when they were exonerated, DNA evidence. That's really what fascism is about. It's about reasserting the natural hierarchy and claiming that we, you know, are the real victims here. The evidence is pretty clear that there is systemic discrimination against African-Americans in all sorts of ways. You can begin by the fact that the average African-American household has less than a tenth of the wealth of the average white household. But there's a lot of evidence, other things, incarceration rates, the kind of crimes that get charged and prosecuted, all sorts of things. This is self-evident. But really, they feel that it's whites who are the victims here. Trump is the victim, right? Everyone's being unfair to him. And people feel this, and they are attracted to it. People should be thinking about fascism as a form of politics, not we're free and we're not. And I think also keep in mind, you know, we study history, we sort of have the sense that it was 1932, then it was 1944. People in Germany just live their lives. They have jobs and kids and they have to get food on the table and things just sort of happen slowly. Day-to-day life continued for a lot of people. And we have to realize that too. Things took more time than we realized. It didn't happen overnight.
It shocks the conscious, it should. How it didn't happen overnight, and yet it happened in a very short window of time. All of society and the way that people lived their lives, even though it didn't happen right away, it happened in the course of years, not centuries.
That's
in this short
true.
Window, people went from human beings to not. It's never too late in terms of the moral obligation that we have to stop it, but I think that it is more than advantageous, it is imperative to act while that window where you can change, where That's you right. still have the right to protest, it is so urgent. When you were talking and when I was reading your piece about Kenosha and Portland, and then you were just speaking now about this false victimhood, I don't expect people to regularly watch Trump rallies, but last night in Nevada, it just was seething with this spirit of retribution, this violence and vengeance, without a trial, just go out, brute force, terror, and we're saving ourselves ahead of any attack.
Well, that's right. All oppression in history is always framed as self-defense. You know, I'm also a scholar of Judaism, and I know my Bible fairly well. I often quote it. If those of your listeners who know their Bible should go back to the book of Exodus in the very beginning when Pharaoh says, let's get wise with these Jews. They're going to threaten us if we don't enslave them and oppress them. So we should oppress them first. So all throughout history, that's been the case from that primordial text. I don't know who wrote it, but certainly the divine or human authors of that text had a sense of oppression being justified as self-defense. You know, Jim Crow, slavery, all these things were defended as self-defense. Nazism was defended as self-defense against Marxism, against Judeo-Marxism, Bolshevism, et cetera, et cetera. That's one thing I would say. A second thing I would say is you could see already 5 years ago the dehumanization. And I often tell my students, when you start seeing human beings described as animals, that's when you really need to get word. And of course, we saw that with Trump from the very beginning. The dehumanization of immigrants as snakes, as scum, as vermin. And you know, that was a big part of Nazi propaganda against the Jews. And the reason for that is quite simple. It's because now it's self-defense. You know, this morning I washed my, just before we talked, I washed my hands with soap. I committed genocide. I'm sure I killed billions of germs. I didn't think twice about it because I need to stay hygienic and keep myself safe from disease. So I washed my hands. If you view Jews, or in this case, immigrants or Latinos or Muslims or African Americans, whoever it is, as animals, as a non-human threat, you can do anything you want to them. And it's not because you hate them. You're just keeping yourself safe. Mm-hmm. A lot of Nazi propaganda was focused on presenting Jews and others as animals for that reason. Because you don't have to hate them to support actions against them if they're a threat to your very hygiene. Yeah. So, you know, I teach fascism and I teach Jewish history and the Holocaust pretty regularly. And I have lectures that I wrote. I mean, I'm not that old, but I have been doing this now. I first started teaching about 20 years ago now, out of grad school. And I have lectures I wrote a long time ago and texts that were written explaining fascism written a long time ago. I mean, some of them go back to the 60s and certainly many are in the 90s when I went to grad school. And I just tell my students, let's talk about what makes fascism. Right? What are we looking for with fascism? And they come up with a list from the readings they had that were written decades ago in many cases. We're looking for a cult of leadership. We're looking for a movement that celebrates violence. We're looking for a movement that delegitimizes the media, that attacks labor unions. That's very important, by the way. Labor unions are a source of threat to ascendant fascist movement. We're looking for a movement that opposes deviant sexuality. That's a big part of fascism as well. You know, the very that famous scene that you've probably seen of Nazis burning books in 33 or 34, whenever it was actually one of the pioneering institutes of sex research, sex and gender research. It was one of the earliest institutes that did that. That was the library they were burning because that was considered a dangerous deviancy. So when we see the movement Trumpism attacking transgenders, attacking gay rights, that's part of it as well. We're looking for a patriarchal system that supports traditional gender roles. I say traditional, they're not really traditional. They're bourgeois, 19th century bourgeois, but gender roles in which men are in charge and women are kept domesticated. We're looking for a movement. And again, this is the list the students are brainstorming with me from the readings they have. And they go through all these things. And then we talk about Hitler. What made Hitler Hitler? And they talk about his talent in attracting emotion, fear and anger above all else. Big lies, repeating big lies as often as possible, never conceding, he said. Hitler wrote, never, ever concede any mistake, ever. That's very important. Hitler was brilliant at his understanding of the use of new technologies. In those days, that meant above all airplanes and radio. Hitler was much more advanced in understanding the use of radio and the use of the airplane to fly from rally to rally to rally in a way that others simply were not. The Nazis were the youngest party by far. The communists and the Nazis were two young parties in Germany, but the Nazis were younger, and they're certainly younger than all the other ones. The average age of a Nazi party member was in the low 30s when they came to power. So they understood these things in a way that other parties didn't. And we just go through this list. And then finally, we read the story. There's a famous book called The Nazi Seizure of Power, which was a micro study of a specific town in Germany, a small town, a few thousands, 10, 20, 30,000 people, whatever it was, trying to understand how it became Nazified, how the people chose the Nazis. In the end, the author, William Sheridan Allen, again, he wrote this decades ago, concluded, he said, at the end of the day, there was a lot of things that made Nazis become powerful and popular. But at the end of the day, there was simply the failure of non-Nazis to realize that whatever Nazism promised, it was an indecent thing. And no matter what they promised to provide, it was itself an evil, indecent thing, and therefore they refused to stop it. And again, these are lectures I wrote years ago. I literally wrote in my lecture notes years ago that Hitler promised to make Germany great again. That's part of the things that they promised. And I walk away from the class. I say, I'm not going to tell you what to think about today. Decide for yourself. But this is the lecture I wrote 10 years ago. These are the readings that were written years ago. You have brainstormed with me this list of items. Perhaps you want to think about that and what it means, right? And again, it doesn't mean that Trump is Hitler. It really doesn't. It means that fascism is a spectrum of politics, and it is ascendant right now in America. There's just no question in my mind. And I'm not the only one saying that. Jason Stanley, I mentioned already, has been saying that. Christopher Browning, who is probably the most important Holocaust historian of the last 50 years, last 30 for sure, he wrote an article, more than one article, in Foreign Affairs and elsewhere talking about this. My teacher, Rudy Koshar, has written about this. Richard Bodek, Richard Steigman, Helene Sinreich in Tennessee, many scholars of fascism and the Holocaust have been writing that we are in a moment of fascist ascendancy and we have to do what we can. Is it a tipping point? There's never a tipping point. I mean, it's getting harder and harder to fight. The Justice Department has been corrupted. We've seen that. It is now the personal attorney of Donald Trump, and it's doing everything it can to corrupt the government, our elections, and the rule of law to support Trumpism. We've seen that openly now. That's a lost cause. The court system has been severely weakened. It's not gone yet. It will be in two, three more years if this doesn't stop, but the court system is severely weakened. Militias are running rampant and nothing is stopping them. I could go on. Things are precarious. It's not too late, but it's getting closer and closer to where there's less and less we can do.
I think that that's an important point. You know, you were talking about those who are sounding the alarm and making the connections and bringing people's attention. We were grateful to have Jason Stanley on this podcast.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't realize that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's
he's brilliant.
He's done really important work in terms of sounding this alarm.
Yes.
And one thing I wanted to ask you is that in the Slate piece you wrote, amid the flurry of steps towards authoritarianism, confidence that institutional stability and cultural norms will protect us from the fate of other states that fell to fascistic movements have taken a profound hit, with Trump's continued attempts to preemptively delegitimize or even outright sabotage the upcoming election, democratic stability is at risk. And yet, there continues to be a lot of fascism denialism. Why do you think this denialism still prevails? And how do you think people who do see this, how do we break through?
So it's two questions. So regarding the media, I, this is just my own perspective and I could be wrong, but it seems to me the media is so obsessed with being both sides, so obsessed with being afraid to appear biased, that they simply refuse for the most part to call things out for what they are. Even just using the word lie, it took them a long time to start saying Trump lied. Lying gives a sense of intention that they don't like, or, you know, instead of saying something is racist, they'll say it's racially charged and all this kind of language. I think that's a mistake. I think I appreciate where they're coming from, but I think it's a mistake to say climate change is a debate, and the media has gotten over that. They no longer talk about climate change as a debate. They now talk about climate change as a fact. Just like the Flat Earth Society is no longer something that the media will say, hey, there's those who think the Earth might be flat, we should consider that. They also, I think for the most part, no longer consider denial of climate change to be something that should be considered. It seems to me that if the scientists are pointing to all this evidence about fascist ascendancy in America, they should be willing to say, the evidence is overwhelming, we have to talk about this, but they've been afraid to do so for a variety of reasons. And I think, you know, they played a huge role in what happened in 2016. There's no question about it. When you look at the way they covered Hillary Clinton versus the way they covered Trump, it was outrageous. Certainly misogyny plays a huge role in that, but not just misogyny. I think it's more than that. I really do. Certainly misogyny was part of it, but you see it still now. That's one part of the answer. In terms of convincing people of the reality, I don't know the best political strategy. I know that those who are inclined to be on the left, whatever that means in any sensible way, need to understand the fascist threat. Anyone who was someone to the left of the nominee, a Bernie supporter or something like that, they need to understand that this is really fascism and that we may not come through if Trump doesn't leave office at the end of his term. And there will be dire, I mean, eventually things will turn around, I suppose. I mean, Nazism didn't last forever, but the cost was pretty terrible by the time we got to 1945. So the cost will likewise be terrible. They need to understand that. Now, in terms of stopping him, I guess the political scientists and theorists and pundits are saying there needs to be a massive wave of votes that no corruption can deny. And it's true, an equal election, you know, winning by one vote will not do it. You have to win by much more, not just because of the Electoral College, but because of massive fraud and suppression of the vote. Florida just today or yesterday upheld the poll tax, effectively, of the ex-felons, that they have to pay off all their fines before they can vote. So it's not just the Electoral College, it's also suppression.
I think one thing that can confuse or muddle the waters is some people, and it's not all poor intentions or anything like that, but people can say, especially people from oppressed communities, can say, my people have always suffered. My ancestors came on slave ships. America has never been good to me. And so I was wondering, from your perspective and your scholarly work, what do you say to those on the left who have a right point that things have already been bad, that we're not just talking about things being really bad, we're talking about something different? The difference between like oppression and genocide is, I guess, how I've tried to explain.
Well, I mean, what I would say is, look, they're right. America has been not a liberal nationalism, but an ethnic nationalism from one. We were a country born, not just born in sin, but born on the backs of the genocide of the Native American, enslavement of Africans. There's no question about that. And that isn't something that just stopped in 1865, right? That's continued to this very day. There's no question about that. What I would say is that there has been a pushback over time to make it better. And that pushback has succeeded sometimes and fallen back sometimes. The 60s and 70s were, in 60s for sure, were in some ways a good time. Not a good time, they were awful in most ways, but it was progress was happening. There was progress for a brief window. For a brief window, the Supreme Court, which has normally been a very reactionary body, was making things better. For a brief window, there was some sort of consensus that certain things had to change. And then it stopped. And I think for the last 25 years, and actually Brian Rosenwald, who is one of the editors at Washington Post, he runs this Made by History group, wrote a great book about talk radio. How talk radio, Rush Limbaugh and then all of his copycats basically made Trump. How they radicalized the Republican base and therefore radicalized the Republican Party and basically made Trump. And I think he's right. And I think, by the way, that's part of why the Orthodox and evangelical world is the way it is, because they've been listening to talk radio for 30 years and been transformed by it. I think Brian is spot on about that. By the way, the Made by History page of Washington Post is terrific that he's built there. It's basically historians saying, here's what I study really well for all of my whole life, and here's how it applies today. So what I would say is you have to affirm what they're saying. America has been a terrible place in many, many ways. And this idea of the founding fathers being great, you know, with this asterisk of, oh, but by the way, except for this, is ridiculous and offensive. The idea of saying that now we're over racism is ridiculous. But what we're seeing with Trump is a real entrenchment that's going to destroy any hope of improvement and is going to, for a while, make things much, much worse. We already have concentration camps. We just do for immigrants. And just like the concentration camps of yesteryear, we're not allowed to see them, to visit them. The media is not allowed in because it's out of sight, out of mind. That's the idea. And they're going to get worse. When the courts are fully under Trump's control and the Justice Department is fully under Trump's control, armed forces are fully under Trump's control, just wait and see. Trump celebrated yesterday, the day before, the killing of the guy who had killed the Trump supporter. And I don't know the context of the original killing. Maybe he was guilty of a homicide that needs to be prosecuted, but he was killed extrajudiciously. And that was being celebrated, while Kyle Rittenhouse is being celebrated for himself killing extrajudiciously. So we're talking about a fascist reality here that will be unlike anything anyone alive today can imagine. That's all I can say. And it will be infinitely worse for minorities than it will be for those who are not minorities. They're going to come for Jews. I don't know if the state will come for Jews. I don't think so. But certainly vigilantes are going to come for Jews. We know that. QAnon is a deeply anti-Semitic philosophy. White nationalists are in general deeply anti-Semitic. So we know they're going to come for Jews eventually. But they're going to come first and foremost for other minorities, especially African Americans and Muslims, Latinos. And the state will come for those groups, not just the vigilantes. So I don't think people really have a sense of the danger we're in. I would urge them to study history, to understand that America is not different. If anything, we're worse than most of the world in many ways. Nazism learned what it learned from us, from Jim Crow and our history here. We're not better than any than the rest of the world. We're just not. We have some things, I mean, do well, and we have things on which we can pin hope and build on. The idea that somehow we're magically different. You know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier, Christopher Browning, who's a great man, and a great scholar, wrote many, many books on the Holocaust, not Jewish, by the way. And his most famous book by far was called Ordinary Men. And it was a study of a Nazi, of one of the, what's called the Einsatzgruppen, these mobile killing squads. After the German army conquered land in Eastern Europe, these squads would come in from the summer of 41 until early 42, before the death camps were up and running. And they would just shoot mostly Jews, a few others, but mostly Jews, point blank range into Dittes. They killed over a million Jews this way in less than, what, 7 or 8 months. They shot over a million Jews, men, women, and children, into ditches. And he studied them. What made them tick? Why did they do it? Basically, why did they follow the orders? And it wasn't because they were anti-Semitic, it turns out. Said basically, they're human beings who are wired to defer to authority. You know, like the famous study of, and I know it's a flawed study, but in the 60s, with the shocks, the Stanley Milgram experiment, when people gave shocks, even though they knew it was wrong. If you haven't studied that experiment, you should. I realize it was a flawed experiment, but still, it showed some important results. And that's what he found with these killers. You know, I ask my students in the class, you will read Ordinary Men, and I'll say, how many of you? So it turns out back then, about 20% of the people said no. They just wouldn't do it. And nothing happened to them, by the way. They weren't like sent to Stalingrad or something. They just went home and did other things for the state. They went back home. But only about 20%. And I said, how many of you would say no? And every hand goes up. And I said, this is not true. I don't know which one of you it is, but 80% of you are wired to say yes. You're saying yes right now in some way. Whatever you can do, you're saying yes right now. So I urge them to see how they're saying yes, whether, you know, it's not yet pulling a trigger, I hope, in most of their cases, but it's certainly in other ways. And if it comes to it, 80% will pull the trigger. That's why the book is called Ordinary Men, Not Ordinary Germans. There's nothing about the German character that makes them more prone to fascism. There's nothing more about the German character that makes them more prone to killing. We see today that Germany is a bastion of democracy in a world in which democracy is crumbling, despite the ascendancy of the AfD. I don't think any reliance on America being special and different in a good way is warranted. Quite the opposite.
I think that American exceptionalism has done grave harm that cannot be summarized in a nugget in podcast form. But I think that there's this dual American exceptionalism right now that's incredibly dangerous. The notion that it can't happen here,
right?
Because we are so good and we are so great and our democracy is so strong that it could never happen here. And also, flip side of this American exceptionalism regarding the power of mass protests and the power of the people, in that, oh, well, we could never oust a tyrant here. They can only do that elsewhere. It's like this dual exceptionalism that I think people have to break with. I think, you know, when you were talking about that book, it reminded me of an article that one of the editors for Refuse Fascism, Sarah Wark, wrote about the drinks in Sobibor. How it's not just what you accept, it's who you become. Mm-hmm. And that people did not start out with all these evil ideas about people, mm-hmm. you know, where they could drink next to mass graves. You know, they didn't start like that, but that which you allow.
It's really too late. I mean, by 1942, there was nothing the average German could do to stop the Holocaust. There really wasn't. It was too late. At that point. And it seems to me, like I said at the very beginning of our conversation, you know, why do we study the Holocaust? It's a very popular subject at the academic level. There's a very sort of a sad humor, but you know, the Hebrew word for Holocaust is Shoah. So they often say in academia, there is no business like the Shoah business. In terms of movies and popular culture, in terms of fundraising, and in terms of college classes, very popular. And I have to ask my students and listeners and whoever will read me, why do we do it? I mean, is it just a sick voyeurism? Are we doing it, we get off on it, it's exciting, and we get to walk away from it, and it was sort of a thrilling, sad tale? Is it some kind of bizarre voyeurism? Or is it because we want to prevent its repetition in some way? And even if it's not exactly the same, anything approaching that, or anything that might logically become that. And if this doesn't qualify, I don't know what does. I honest to God don't know what does. If you think never again, and again, there are some on the right who say never, so there are some Jews on the right who I argue with a lot, never again means never again to us, and I don't care about the rest of the world. right? So I'm going to commit genocide if I need to make sure that Jews are never killed again. And I think Meir Kahane, the famous Jewish racist, actually published a book called Never Again. He helped popularize the phrase. So I get that some people think of it that way. I sure as hell don't. To me, never again means we study history so that when we see patterns repeating, we intervene before it's too late. We get motivated to intervene before it's too late. That should have happened 4 years ago. It began to happen 2 years ago. Can you imagine where we'd be if the House hadn't flipped to the Democratic control in 2018? My God, it's hard to imagine. I hope it saves us now. And by the way, even if we are successful in resisting fascism for this moment, in the sense that the election, despite all of the evidence of suppression and all of the effort by Trump and his party to undermine popular confidence in the results, if we somehow get Trump out of the White House and Biden and Harris come to office, even if that happens, culturally, we have to undergo some kind of detoxification. You know, after World War II, Germany was forced to undergo a denazification, not so much at the level of institutions. In other words, you couldn't just fire every Nazi from being a judge or a police captain, because then there'd be no one to be judges and police captains. There were too many Nazis. But they really restructured the education system to purge Nazism from the culture as much as possible, to teach the history of what happened, to teach that it was wrong, and so on. Austria, by the way, didn't have to go through that. It's one of the reasons why anti-Semitism and Nazi sympathies lasted so much longer there, because they didn't have to go through that. We have to undergo some kind of a denazification. And I don't know how. One idea I had once was that we should fund every single school child to go visit the Museum of African American History and across the road, the Holocaust Museum. I think every single school child going to those two museums would be helpful, especially the African American History Museum, but both of them really. Something like that. That's the kind of funding that we need to save ourselves. So that's just in terms of saving our culture. But at the moment, we have to overwhelm the polls. I mean, I don't know what else we can do, but to get people on the left to realize the threat, that's the strategy. I'm not sure. Democrats don't have a great track record of being good politicians. So I hope they manage it. I don't know what else we can do. We should keep talking. We should keep podcasting. We should keep marching. We should keep writing. We should keep speaking, speaking and speaking and speaking and speaking to get a sense of the danger. And then we'll have to see if we're successful or not, because the consequences of failure are scary to think about. They really are.
They truly are. And I think that every day that he spews these lies, the racism and threats, we move further down the road of fascism. Mm-hmm. And every day they remain in power and they're not stopped, it becomes further entrenched and further normalized.
That's
and
right.
That every day that even us with Hearts for Humanity, every day we allow it, every day that we're not speaking out against it, every day that we're not in the streets, every day that we're not writing about it and marshaling people to act, we're complicit.
That's right.
And,
I agree.
You know,
and
I think that if we are in the streets now, in the next, what is it at this point, six weeks, is it?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. You know, it can change the equation constraining this regime's ability to so easily steal, you know, they're already stealing the election, but to outright steal it.
We know from polls, we know, and Trump knows it too, that in a fair election, he knows he would lose in a landslide. There's just no question about it.
Right.
It's overwhelming. And sure, there are things that we can't judge for, people who are too embarrassed to support Trump and so they're lying. But for the most part, we know. And not just overall in the nation, but in the battleground states that really flipped the election because of the Electoral College. We know that, and he knows it. There's no question. That's why he's encouraging people to vote twice, literally, which is an insanity. I mean, who would have thought the President of the United States encouraging, and the Attorney General, the top law enforcement official in the country, literally saying, I'm not sure if that's illegal to vote twice or not. You have to look into that. I mean, we are in a bizarro world. And that's what I say when I say the Justice Department's already lost, that's what I mean. It's already lost. That's gone. That's been corrupted. Now, the presidency is gone. The Senate is a rubber stamp. The Supreme Court is not entirely, but largely a rubber stamp. It will become a complete rubber stamp. You don't need to have an enabling act. For those of you who don't remember this, your listeners, that was when the Nazis burned down the parliament building. They blamed it on communists. And they said, you have to give Hitler temporary dictatorial powers. And every party in parliament, except for the socialists and the communists, of course, voted for it. They gave it, the socialists tried to resist, but they were not quite numerous enough. They weren't really socialists, they were social democrats, but whatever. And Hitler was given dictatorial powers. You don't need an enabling act if the Senate and the courts are already in your hands and you have a rubber stamp. You don't need an enabling act. You just do whatever you want and no one's going to stop you. I think what we have to do is consider the cultural and the institutional as two different fronts of what is happening here. Mm-hmm. We have to fight at both levels.
We have to fight in both levels is right. And I think we can't stop until we win on both fronts.
That's right. And the cultural front will take a long time.
Long time, yeah. Until they are driven from power. And again, I'm advocating nonviolence and
absolutely nonviolence.
But I think we also are going to need to rid that program from society. And that isn't going to, they're not just going to go away without a political struggle. And by they, I mean his thugs that are in the street that have been unleashed. And the ones that don't seem as thuggish, but are followers.
There are more Kyle Rittenhouses out there. Yeah. Sad to say it, but there's going to be more murders. I should predict that, but it's self-evident that inevitably it's going to happen. They're being encouraged and they're being told they're going to be protected. So I that's, again, part of the rise of fascism is the rise of militias that act with a sense of freedom, that they won't be prosecuted in any way or harmed in any way what they did. Both of those things are true. And I recognize, people have to live their lives. I recognize not everybody's in a position just to march 24 hours a day. But I think there's things we all can do. Certainly just talking with our friends and not just saying, well, I don't want to be political. Most people are not political. And I get that. You and I are very politicized and most people are not. But this is not a time to be non-political because non-political is political. Saying to stay out of it,
yeah, is
what Elie Wiesel taught us. Is what Martin Luther King Jr. taught us, right? To be non-political is to say, whoever is in power now, I support them.
I'll be blunt. This is a moment where we do, in some ways, need to stop everything. And yes, we have to change our lives in accordance to what is happening in the world to stop a threat that imperils humanity. Not only does he being Trump, endanger the lives of people in this country, he endangers the lives of people all over the world. We're talking about a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear trigger. I want to just express my deep appreciation for you taking the time. And
thank you for everything you do, organizationally and otherwise.
That was Joshua Shanes, Associate Professor of Jewish Studies and Director of the Center of Israel Studies at the College of Charleston, talking with Sam Goldman of Refuse Fascism on the Refuse Fascism podcast, Inside Without Now.
Cats like me and you have got laws, but they adhere to laws outside the laws and say down. By those we don't subscribe to, the world is getting strange.